I'm going to read for us this morning, and I'm going to read from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 1-13. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish, and five were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. "Sir, sir," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, "I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Parables that pack a punch, and you might need your gum shield this morning, so let me pray for us. Our gracious Heavenly Father, please do cause our faith to rise, cause our eyes to see your majestic love and authority. In Jesus' name, amen. I don't know if you've seen it, through the summer holidays, the petrol stations Esso have been running an advertising campaign all about being ready. So you can see some of them there. "Those who checked their tyres, we salute you. Here's to everyone who packed the night before travelling. A planned journey is a smoother journey." That's a little tagline, you might not be able to read it. The one in the middle, which is obviously how Esso actually make their money. "Those who fill up the day before travelling, we applaud you. A planned journey is a smoother journey." Now, I have to confess that I haven't been listening to Esso's advertising campaign. I've tended to generally be a person who fills up the car on the day, on the way to holiday, which is a bit of a recipe for disaster, because obviously, in the morning, we don't pack the car as fast as I want because the kids are there, and no one's moving as fast as I expect them to, and so we get in the car late. Then we stop straight away, and the kids are like, "Why have we already stopped? We only just started." It's a recipe for disaster. What we need to see this morning is that there is going to be no time for that sort of thing on the day when Jesus comes back. That's what this parable is all about. Jesus has been teaching about the end of the world, the day when he'll return, for the whole of chapter 24 leading up to this parable. And he begins this parable at that time. At that time, he's talking about the day when he's going to come back. At that time, he says, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. And we're going to get into what that's all about. But the point in the parable is to illustrate what Jesus has already stressed throughout the previous chapter. And it comes to a head in verse 13. Jesus says, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." What we need to see this morning is that there is nothing now that is more important than being ready for then, for the day when Jesus comes back, for that time. You're probably familiar with the famous slogan, "Jesus is coming, look busy." But we're going to see this morning that if that cry has already gone out, that Jesus is coming, which it does in verse 6, then it's already too late to start looking busy. If you've not already actually been busy getting ready for his return, then you will find yourself on the wrong side of that locked door in verse 10. And so our parable raises for us two questions this morning, which we're going to look at. And the first question is this: did you know you were invited to the wedding? Did you know you're invited to the wedding? You see, Jesus' choice of imagery here, it's not random. Throughout the Old Testament, God describes himself and is described as the bridegroom or the husband, and his people are his bride. That same imagery carries on all the way through the New Testament, all the way to the end where Jesus is described as the groom. Heaven is the wedding banquet, and Jesus celebrates with his wife, his bride, the church, his people. And here, this parable, it's a key point where Jesus is applying that Old Testament imagery which refers to God to himself. Jesus is God, and God's people are Jesus' people. And Jesus has come as the bridegroom to invite all people to that wedding banquet, which is described at the end of the Bible in Revelation. And so before we get into the details of the parable, I want to make sure that you know that you are invited to the heavenly wedding. Notice in the parable that those who end up locked out of the wedding, they were invited. All 10 virgins are invited to the wedding. They're all welcome at the wedding. It wasn't lack of an invite that led to them being, to five of them being excluded. As we'll see in a bit, they were locked out because of the way they responded to the invitation, because of the way they treated the bridegroom. But up front, I want us to understand that each of us is invited. And each of us is personally responsible for the way we respond. The way we respond to this invitation is the most important decision we can make in our lives. There is nothing now that is more important than being ready for then, for that day, the day when Jesus comes back. And if you're going to be ready for that day, you first need to know that you were invited to the wedding. You need to know that the bridegroom, Jesus, is holding out his hands to you. And he's asking you to respond before it's too late. It's worth noting as well, before we move on, that this passage puts to bed at least two, I guess predominantly Roman Catholic ways of thinking about Christianity and the afterlife. First of all, the five who aren't ready, well, no one else can help them. There aren't any priests handing out extra oil for those who weren't ready on that day or making preparations on their behalf in advance. This passage shows us that you need to make your own response to Jesus if you're going to be allowed into the wedding. Now, you might be familiar with one of my favorite films, The Godfather. You'll know, if you are, that the Catholic Church is a major part of family life for the Corleone family. And there's a scene, sorry for spoilers, it's not a new film, where the godfather is becoming a godfather to his sister's baby. He's in a Catholic church and he's making all his promises, but simultaneously woven into the sequence of the film, his orders to execute various enemies are being carried out across the city. It's quite poignant. Although he's standing in a church making promises to be a godfather, Michael Corleone, fictional though he is not ready for Jesus' return. And no priest can do anything about that for him. Each of us must respond personally and make ourselves ready for the wedding. We can't depend on anyone else to do it for us. No, my grandma goes to church or I went to chapel at school. None of those things will cut it if you yourself don't respond personally to Jesus' invitation. That's the first thing we need to see. Secondly, as we'll see as we go on, once the door to the wedding is shut, that's it. There's no second chances, no halfway house. You're either in or you're out. More TV. At the moment, we're watching this program on Netflix, The Good Place. It's a comedy series. It's all about where people end up when they die. It doesn't sound that funny, but it is a funny program. And a major theme of the program is whether you can get from the bad place to the good place after you've died. and whether there's a medium place. You have to watch it on Netflix, it's good. Well, this passage gives us the answer. There's no medium place, no purgatory, no second chances to get into the wedding, no backdoor entrance. If you're not ready when the bridegroom comes, that is it. But the good news, which I want us to see up front, is that we are all invited. You are all invited to the wedding. So there's no reason not to be ready, not to respond to the bridegroom's invitation. There'll be no weighing of good and bad deeds at the door. The only thing that matters is how you respond to Jesus. But the invitation to respond is open to everyone. Jesus will accept anyone who comes to him. He accepts you with open arms, an open heart to his wedding banquets. So, did you know you were invited to the wedding? Well, you do now. And once we know we're invited, we can turn to our second question, which is what the details in the parable are all about. And that's this question. Are you ready for the wedding? Are you ready for the wedding? Jesus tells this parable to people who already know they're invited and expect to be allowed in to that final wedding. So the warning here is actually more stark than we might have first imagined. The question, are you ready for the wedding, is asked of people who all assume that they are. The distinction this parable makes isn't between those who don't pay any heed to Jesus and those who do. It's between those who do but are revealed to not be ready and those who are ready. So we could say that all 10 virgins are or could be in this building right now. Regular churchgoers. The warning that Jesus is presenting is to all of us in this room to make sure that we really are ready for him to come back. Now, it's notoriously difficult to piece together the specific tradition that's being played out here, and commentators will spend lots of time debating it. But what is clear is that part of the wedding formalities was that a group of young women, likely friends of the bride, we could think of them a bit like bridesmaids, would escort the groom to the bride by torchlight. And we're imagining here this sort of torch, a sort of stick with a rag on it, crucially, which needed soaking in oil to set alight. And so, Jesus says, at that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. All 10 take a lamp to go and meet the bridegroom. But 5 are wise and take oil with them, and 5 are foolish and don't. Lots of you are probably familiar with a very famous story which comes earlier on in Matthew's Gospel. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The foolish man built his house on the sand. Jesus says there that everyone who hears my words and puts them into practice is like the wise man. And that distinction between wise and the foolish continues here. The wise are ready and prepared, the foolish are not. We should notice as well that the falling asleep isn't the issue here. All of them fall asleep. The issue, the question, is whether they're ready when the bridegroom eventually arrives. And so the story goes on from verse 6. At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet. And the door was shut. Later, the others also came. "Sir, sir," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Now, one of Nikki's guilty pleasures is watching this program, Say Yes to the Dress. I'm not actually sure if she feels that guilty about it, but I think she should. It's a reality TV show which follows brides going to buy their... I can see some people grinning. That, do you watch this program? Yeah. It follows brides going to buy their wedding dresses, which apparently makes for good TV. Invariably, they're surrounded by friends and family. But the viewer and the bride quickly discover that some who claim to be her friends, and even some family who claim to love her, show that all they care about is themselves. I can see some nodding from viewers. Which obviously is, that's part of the reason it makes for good TV. But the wise brides, they quickly get rid of the people, the person, who reveal themselves to be fake friends and fickle family members. And that's sort of what's going on here. Without any oil, the foolish virgins find they can't get their lamps to stay alight. They have a torch with no battery, and so they ask the wise ones to share. But of course, if the wise ones share their oil, there won't be enough to keep the lamps alight for the whole procession. And that would be devastating for the couple. It would be shameful in that sort of culture. So we find out that the foolish ones, they've given no thought to the bride and groom, to their role in supporting them on the wedding day. The wise have, and they won't let the foolish ones dishonor the couple even further by leaving them with no lamplight at all. So the foolish, they quickly run off to buy some oil, but it's too late. They weren't ready when they needed to be. And by the time they get back to the procession, the procession has gone. They've missed it. Whatever oil they managed to buy is useless now anyway. Verse 10, while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. It's often a joke that's made at weddings, I think, that when it's time for the best man to present the rings, the vicar will often joke, I hope the best man's got some rings, and normally they do. But imagine if they didn't. Imagine what that would do to the wedding. That's the sort of thing we've got to be imagining here. And so, the ending of verse 10 is where the parable takes a sharp and jarring turn away from the story and into the reality the story represents. Up till now, it's been a very realistic picture of what would happen in a wedding procession. But then Jesus says, the door was shut. And that should shock us. If we're trying to imagine a sort of village wedding scenario where the whole community is invited, people are coming and going all day, you wouldn't expect the door to get locked. But Jesus has turned attention here in a shocking way to the foolish virgins and what they've done. They've dishonored the couple. They've shown themselves to be fake friends and fickle family members. And so when the others finally arrive, they get a harrowing response from the bridegroom. I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Perhaps that line sounds familiar. We've already been back to Matthew chapter 7 for the story of the wise and foolish builders, but that story is itself an illustration of Jesus' statement right before it, that not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. And so here, while those who are ready are enjoying the wedding banquet, the rest of the bridesmaids turn up saying, Lord, Lord. And what response do they get? I don't know you. While the ready rejoice, the rest are rejected. There's no second chance, no backdoor entrance. Those who aren't ready when the bridegroom returns find themselves locked out of the wedding. And we need to recognize that this parable is a fearsome warning. A warning against claiming to be a Christian without actually submitting your life to Jesus. Those who are found to be fake friends and fickle family members will not be allowed in. They will be found out. It's not good enough just to pick up a lamp. Jesus says you need to light it and keep it burning. He calls you to turn to him, to accept his invitation, and to prepare for the wedding. To put on the right clothes, to pay attention to the directions on the invitation. And so this parable is a fearsome warning against both nominal and liberal Christianity. Going to church, holding a lamp, is no guarantee. Jesus expects wholehearted preparation and readiness for his wedding banquets. The ready will rejoice, while the rest are rejected. And so the question is, are you ready for the wedding? There is nothing now that is more important than being ready for then, for that day, for the day when Jesus comes back. And Jesus expects it to be hard work to always be ready. Life is full of distractions, temptations, seemingly better or easier paths to take. The various stresses and strains of life can seem overwhelming and all-consuming. In this whole section of Jesus' teaching, there's been a constant theme of the length of time between Jesus' ascension and then his second coming. And that length of time, the distractions and temptations which it's full of, well, Jesus says they will reveal those who are ready from those who are fake friends and fickle family members. It's not enough to pick up a lamp. The lamp needs to be lit and to stay lit. It's not enough to say you want to go to the wedding. Jesus says you have to take action to prepare, to be dressed in the right clothes, to follow the directions, to listen to Jesus and obey him. Verse 13, therefore keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. Now, this parable, it doesn't give us any details on what it looks like to be ready beyond the metaphor in the story of the oil. You can read the next parable when you get home for some of that. The parable of the talents goes into more details of what it might look like. And being ready definitely doesn't mean being morally perfect. The Bible's clear that none of us can achieve that in this world. But this parable does ask us to raise our bar of what it means to follow Jesus, to be someone who is waiting for the bridegroom to return, someone who is always ready. This parable says to those who are too comfortable being in this world, who are too content to rest on their laurels and plateau in Christian growth, you need to always be ready. Keep watch. When we care more about our place in this world than our place at the wedding banquet to come, Jesus says, keep watch. Be ready. There is nothing now that is more important than being ready for then, for that day, the day when Jesus comes back. But what we can see, what we can rejoice is that on that day, when the door shuts, everything bad, everything sad will be locked out on the other side. This parable is full of wonderful news for those who accept Jesus' invitation. The ready will rejoice, but the rest will reel in the terrible realization that it's too late. When the bridegroom comes, the ready will rejoice, while the rest are rejected. For some of you, the question might be raised by this parable, will God really reject people like this? It's a common question people ask. If we think of God as a God of love, how can he do that to people? How can he lock them out in the end? What I say to you up front, and you can come and talk to me about it afterwards, is that we need to see that God in his love offers the invitation to everyone. So we've seen you are invited to the wedding. But like the five foolish virgins, many reject that invitation. They dishonor the bridegroom by failing to be ready for the wedding. Everyone has the opportunity to enjoy the wedding banquet. Those who are shut out are the ones who choose to spurn that invitation. You're invited to the wedding. The question is, will you accept the invitation and get yourself ready? Are you ready for the bridegroom to return? Jesus says, keep watch, always be ready, because you do not know the day or the hour. My late grandfather emigrated to the UK from India in the 1950s. When he got off the boat, I think he was in Liverpool, he considered it to be part of his emigration to become a Christian. That was part of being in Britain as far as he was concerned. So from the moment he arrived to the moment he died, he was a regular churchgoer, as far as I'm aware. The thing is, he would say things to my mum, his daughter, like this. Oh, don't get too into it. Don't let it take over your life. Now, I don't know where he was at spiritually when he died. He was at an evangelical church, the church I grew up at, and the ministers thought he was a believer in the end. But what he said to my mum revealed that at that point, at least, he wasn't ready. He was like the foolish virgins. See, Jesus' point here is that unless following him has taken over your life, you're not ready for his return. There is nothing now that is more important than being ready for then, for that day, the day when Jesus comes back. And when Jesus comes back, the ready will rejoice, while the rest are rejected.